Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, installing energy-efficient windows to help lower utility bills year-round. More at callmosby.com.
From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Thursday, April 17th. I'm Abby Larico. Former Detention Facilities Oversight Board member Janice Mensa hopes for justice after they say police beat them unconscious in 2023 while trying to access the St. Louis City Jail. Mensa believes the jail should be closed for good, like the workhouse.
Jail is not a place that supports life. It is not a place where you get rehabilitation. It is not a place where you leave better or more whole than when you entered.
Mensa's arrest story and their perspective on jail reform in St. Louis coming up after this news on The Gateway. The fate of a St. Louis man freed from prison last year could be back on the docket, with the Missouri Supreme Court ruling this week that Attorney General Andrew Bailey could appeal the exoneration of Christopher Dunn. As St. Louis Public Radio's Chad Davis reports, the proceedings would broach new territory, even if the evidence would not.
The case centered around a 1990 murder where two witnesses who testified against Dunn later recanted. Circuit Judge Jason Sennheiser ruled last year that Dunn was wrongfully convicted and Circuit Attorney Gabe Gore dropped the charges. But Attorney General Andrew Bailey has sought to appeal the ruling. Retired Missouri Supreme Court Judge Michael Wolf says this is unusual because the charges have been dropped. The appeals court won't hear any new information.
Judge Sennheiser is the one who saw the witnesses, heard their testimony, looked at the evidence, or was there at the trial. The Court of Appeals is not a trial court. It just reads the paper.
A spokesperson for Bailey could not be reached for comment. Wolf says the appeal could go on to next year. I'm Chad Davis, St. Louis Public Radio.
KDHX pressed pause yesterday on plans to sell the station to Christian network K-Love. A KDHX lawyer asked a judge to instead set up a bidding process to field more offers. St. Louis Public Radio's Jeremy Goodwin reports.
KDHX leaders still want to sell the station as soon as a judge will allow it, to pay off $2 million in debt. But another religious broadcaster, the nonprofit behind 99.1 Joy FM, outbid K-Love this week, offering to buy KDHX for $5.5 million. That's more than $1 million above K-Love's base offer, which increases incrementally if a sale goes through quickly. A group of KDHX supporters argued in court they need more time to develop an offer of their own, combined with a plan the Christian broadcasters can't match to keep KDHX on the air. A hearing to set up a station auction is now set for May 13th. I'm Jeremy Goodwin, St. Louis Public Radio.
Health outreach groups in Missouri are cutting vaccination efforts after a drop-off in federal grant money coming to the state. The state health department distributes some of that federal money to groups such as the Missouri Rural Health Association and Missouri Immunization Coalition. The grants pay for immunization education and outreach efforts. Lawrence Simonson is the Immunization Coalition's executive director. He says the cuts come as vaccination funding is crucial.
If somebody brings in, say, the measles into the state of Missouri, that could have a widespread negative effect on our state, and we won't have the funding to even respond to that.
Two dozen states have sued the federal government to keep the health cuts from going into effect. The Missouri Department of Health and Senior Services is seeking nonprofit sponsors to help provide summer meals for children through its summer food service program. That's even though the program is one of some 2,600 whose funding could be slashed by Trump administration policies. The program is federally funded by the U.S. Department of Agriculture and utilizes nonprofit organizations to serve the meals in eligible areas where a sizable percentage of the population qualifies for free or reduced lunches. Organizations are then reimbursed for the cost of providing the food through USDA grants. Summer Food Service Program Coordinator Tanya Harvey says last summer, some 300 sponsor organizations provided more than 4.5 million meals to children across the state.
Any child can come and get a meal that lives in that area. They just keep track of how many children come, but they do not have to, you know, give names of those children or anything like that, and there's no enrollment form.
Harvey says sponsors can visit DHSS's website to apply through May 1st, and families can use the same link to view meal sites during the summer. University of Missouri leaders signed a contract this week to design and build a second nuclear reactor on campus. But as Jana Rose Schleiss reports, MU still needs to raise about 80% of the project's costs.
The additional nuclear reactor, called NextGen MIR, will cost an estimated $1 billion. University of Missouri President Moon Choi said about $200 million, approximately 20%, of the project's funding has been secured. He expects half of the investment for the new nuclear reactor to come from federal and state government. Despite the precarious political climate around federal funding, Choi said he's committed to raising the money.
I'll go anywhere to see anyone that will provide support for this project. It is that important, not only for Missouri, but for the United States.
Like an existing reactor on campus, the new one will produce different versions of chemical elements for use in cancer treatments. I'm Jana Rose Schleiss.
After May 7th, travelers will need a real ID or valid passport to board domestic flights and enter some federal facilities. Only about 45% of Missouri residents with driver's license or state IDs have transitioned to real ID cards. The adoption rate is even lower in Illinois, with only about 35% making the switch. Illinois DMVs are facing a surge in demand leading up to the deadline. Missouri Director of Revenue Trish Vincent says there's no such frenzy in the Show Me State as of this week.
You know, if people don't travel or they don't plan on being on a domestic flight or going to federal office buildings like courthouses or military installations, they may not think they need one.
Real IDs won't be needed to drive, vote, or show proof of age when buying alcohol or tobacco. Janice Mensa is the former vice chair of the St. Louis Detention Facilities Oversight Board and is scheduled to go on trial next month for charges stemming from a 2023 arrest at the City Justice Center. Mensa says police beat them unconscious while waiting to see a detainee, but police say Mensa ignored orders and refused to leave. Mensa spoke about the need for greater transparency at the jail, where 19 detainees have died since 2020, with STLPR's Lucretia Wembley.
It's been almost 2 years since you were arrested at the CJC and charged with trespassing and resisting arrest. Walk me through what happened that day.
Sure. So on that day, there was an unconfirmed report that there was a death at the facility. So I went to the jail to have the staff confirm whether or not someone died. And while I was waiting to do an oversight visit, the warden, without my knowledge, called the police. After they arrived, they had thrown me to the ground, punched me, you know, and I woke up kind of in the hospital.
What sorts of injuries did you suffer?
Well, I am a relatively small person, about 130 pounds, and these were two male officers that were probably 250 pounds, you know, partially on top of me. So, yeah, just kind of physical injuries that lasted past that day.
And so the St. Louis Board of Aldermen made changes to the Detention Facilities Oversight Board in November 2023 in an effort to streamline training and clarify its role. But still, the board hasn't met with a detainee at the jail since April 2024. With ordinance changes and several promises made over the years, why has the DFOB struggled to get access to complaints or access to the city jail?
It's certainly not for lack of trying. I think the biggest barrier when I was on the oversight board was the city. So the mayor's office, the director of public safety was Charles Coyle, and the then warden, Jennifer Clemens Abdullah. A few members of the board did get a tour that was very structured and scheduled, and we didn't actually meet with any detainees. It was just to see the building.
So DFOB leaders say that they met with Mayor-elect Kara Spencer just before the election last week and were promised greater access to the jail and transparency. Do you have any hope that Interim Commissioner of Corrections Doug Burris or Spencer will keep their word?
I will say that it is a good sign that the now mayor was interested in meeting with the board. I remember it was very difficult to get any communication from the mayor. It does have potential for good that there are new people in charge, a new mayor, a new city councilor, a new warden of the jail. But I think unless there are real changes to the way the jail is run or in my opinion, what should happen, the jail is closed, we're still going to have the same issues. There was a death just a few weeks ago.
So nearly half the number of people who died in custody at the city jail lost their lives due to health problems that many jail reform advocates say could have been prevented, like Carlton Bernard, who died in custody in 2023 after not getting access to his diabetes medication in time. What can be done to ensure people get access to medical care in a timely fashion?
I think the critical issue is that jail is not a place that supports life. It is not a place where you get care, you get rehabilitation. It is not a place where you leave better or more whole than when you entered.
Arch City Defenders, which is representing you, Janice, says they hope the city dismisses the municipal charges and issues you an apology. How hopeful are you that the charges against you will be dropped?
Well, I do have renewed hope now that there is a different mayor. I did get the sense that the old administration was more interested in upholding the status quo than in changing things. I'm hopeful, but I'm still ready, more focused on holding people accountable than hoping that they come through for me.
That was Janice Mensah, former vice chair of the Detention Facilities Oversight Board in St. Louis, speaking with St. Louis Public Radio's Lucretia Wembley. Our Brian Moline edited that piece. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this has been The Gateway.